argument this morning is Deng against Sears Roebuck. Mr. Sohn.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Alan Sohn. I'm appearing on behalf of the appellant, Yuming Deng. The absence of proof is not proof of absence. This is an archaeological maxim which I learned on a recent trip to Israel. When it was discovered that a crusader's headquarters and fortress that had been buried for over 700 years existed under the port of Akko. Historians knew it was there, archaeologists knew it was there, but had been buried by the Muslim Mamluk conquerors of the crusaders in order to destroy all evidence of the crusaders' presence in the Holy Land. How is that relevant to this case? Because Sears destroyed key material evidence. They failed to preserve key material evidence which would have disclosed that the plaintiff was authorized to delete certain computer worksheets that he had worked on for models on behalf of Sears, which had been completed and which he no longer needed, and which he was authorized to delete. And that has made a material difference in this case. And it would have made a material difference in the criminal complaint that was filed by Sears, because had it been disclosed, it would have shown that Mr. Deng was so authorized to delete that material, and the state's attorney would have had to dismiss the case. It materially and detrimentally prejudiced Mr. Deng. Now, Illinois, speaking of the malicious prosecution issue and to dismiss the abandonment of the proceedings by the state's attorney, Illinois has adopted the restatement of torts position. Under Section 659 sub C, criminal proceedings terminated by abandonment are considered to be in favor of the accused as a matter of law. There are only four exceptions to this rule.
You know, I'm going to pass that issue because I think you might, maybe you have a winner on that one, but I don't know where you can establish how this record would establish a complete lack of probable cause or any malice on the part of Sears. The prosecutor made the decision to issue the charges here, and Mr. Deng was invited to come many times to explain his situation, and he didn't do that.
Your Honor, firstly, the probable cause and malice issues have not been raised in this appeal. The only issue that is being raised...
Well, they have been raised in this appeal.
They were raised in
Sears has argued in defense of its favorable judgment that you have not shown lack of probable cause. And any appellee can raise in defense of its judgment any argument presented to the district court. And then you filed a reply brief that said we're refusing to discuss this issue, which looks to me pretty much like a forfeiture.
Well, it's not a forfeiture, Your Honor. The probable cause issue, there was no probable cause. The prosecutor did not file the criminal complaint. The criminal complaint was signed by Sears. Prosecutor and the Detective Baumert were given certain sheets of paper which consisted of commands to the computer that were put into the computer that were done by Mr. Deng. They showed nothing. They did not show what the actual computer material had been deleted. So the prosecutor, as evidenced by Ms. Chandra's statement at her deposition, I didn't understand the evidence. I didn't understand what I had. And so I turned the file over to Ms. Abraham. And Ms. Abraham, after she received the file, did not continue with the prosecution. It was abandoned. Now, with regard to the question of malice, there is evidence in the record that Mr. Deng and Mr. Teague, who was his supervisor, who was the head of his department, there was another supervisor between him and Mr. Teague, Mr. Peng, had very poor relations. They had a recent disagreement regarding a review that Mr. Teague had changed. Mr. Peng had given Mr. Deng a positive review, which would have included promotions and...
I don't understand how this responds to Sears' argument. Sears says that it had probable cause and then says supervisor said they were still using these data and it was a rule that people couldn't delete data that were being used. And Sears says Deng had no business even being on the premises because he was reporting sick. So we have somebody who has quit, who's refusing to work, and who then comes in and deletes data essentially on the way out the door, which certainly looks like the work of a saboteur. Now, that may be right or it may be wrong, but in what way would that not be probable cause?
It's not probable cause because Mr. Teague knew very well that the information that was deleted from the computer was only deleted from Mr. Deng's computer workspace.
What was he doing on the premises?
He had taken a leave of absence because he was very upset over the situation with his review. So he was ill, but he had not quit.
But he wasn't supposed to be on the premises.
I think he was being conscientious in that he was taking care
That's his story. The alternative understanding is that he returned to sabotage the work. Now, probable cause doesn't mean a certainty. It doesn't even mean more likely than not. It just means, a reasonably founded suspicion. There are two alternative interpretations of what happened in these
cases. We are here on an appeal from a summary judgment. And in a summary judgment, all inferences are to be considered in favor of the non-movant. Now, the summary judgment order did not deal at all with the issue of probable cause or malice. Now, it was raised in the appellee's brief, and I think we can answer it by saying, number one, Teague was retaliating against Mr. Deng. There was malice. Teague knew that the information that was deleted was not deleted from Sears' computer.
That's your defense. One of the things I find troublesome in your case, you treat the restatement as if it were a statute that had been enacted by Illinois. I don't think that's correct. If you look at the restatement's discussion of the various ways of various inference you draw from terminations, it's not satisfactory viewed as a statute.
It's a position that has been adopted by the Illinois Supreme Court in two cases.
The Illinois Supreme Court has said we treat the restatement of torts as if it were a statute, and we apply it literally. And if you're not in this one of these pigeonholes, you're out of luck. I don't see that because if you look at the restatement in your brief, in your reply brief on page 5, there's an obvious mismatch because 659 says manner of termination, criminal proceedings are turned in favor of the accused. 660 is indecisive termination of proceedings. Well, what happened here is well described as indecisive termination, but doesn't fit clearly A through D. So, the people who draft the American Law Institute doesn't tell states, please enact the restatement into your positive law. It's meant as guidance, not
Well, the fact is that in two Illinois Supreme Court cases, this was adopted.
The likeliest interpretation of what happened here is that the prosecution was abandoned because it looked as if it was going to be complicated computer stuff, and it wasn't that terrible a crime, and the state has very limited resources, so they abandoned it. There's no implication that they abandoned it because they believed Deng's theory. There's no evidence of that.
Well, as I to reiterate, the Supreme Court has adopted the restatement.
It hasn't adopted it every word by word and said this is a statute. They don't have the authority to enact statutes.
Your Honor,
what sense does it make? What sense does it make to say that we have to assume that this prosecution was abandoned because the state concluded that Deng was innocent?
Well, I think this is a guideline. Let's say it is a guideline. that a noli pros, according to the dictionary, means they're unwilling to pursue the case. The guideline is that this would be a formal abandonment of the proceeding. Now, this is on summary judgment. The Supreme Court of Illinois said that
What if they null pros the case because this person was going to be a witness to them in another case, and they knew he was guilty, he admitted he was guilty, but they figured he's a small fry, we're going to use you in another case, so, you know, if you play ball with us, we'll null pros.
However, we
don't... There
wouldn't
be any inference of innocence there, would there?
We don't know that. But
of course we don't know that. That's my problem.
We don't know that, and Mr. Dang should have the opportunity to present the facts and the evidence to a jury. He was deprived of that because of the entry of the summary judgment. Swick versus Leotard, the Supreme Court said, quote, fairness requires the plaintiff be given an opportunity to provide evidence to a jury. Now, there were conflicting facts here.
Why is that of any moment here?
Because
which cases are decided by a judge and which cases are decided by a jury in federal court is a matter of federal law, not of state law.
Well, we're applying state law on the issue of malicious prosecution.
Substantive law.
Right.
We apply federal law on the allocation of tasks between judges and juries.
Well, under federal law, under the Celotex case, and under other cases involving summary judgment, all inferences are to be drawn in favor of the non-movant. Now, there was disputed evidence in this case. Mr. Dang said, and his testimony at his deposition and in his affidavit, what I deleted was junk. What I deleted was work product.
That's a separate issue. The issue is, or the current issue under discussion is this... is the abandonment of the proceeding. I didn't think you wanted evidence on that. I thought you were taking the position that the restatement commanded a finding that this was that this was abandoned because that the abandonment was a favorable disposition. I thought you were asserting that as a matter of law.
I am asserting it as a matter of law, but I do believe that the evidence, if we're allowed to prove it, if we're allowed to present it, would show that the dismissal was indicative of the Mr. Dang's innocence. So on both sides, either on as a matter of law or as a matter of evidence, we didn't get a chance to present our evidence, and we should have under summary judgment. We should have had a chance.
Why you're arguing about innocence here? Because it doesn't require an element of malicious prosecution. Doesn't require a finding that you were innocent. A finding that the proceedings were terminated in your favor. And to me, if you're charged in a criminal case and you're not convicted, that's terminated in your favor.
We don't have to prove our innocence. All we have to prove on the basis of the facts is that the proceedings were terminated in favor of the accused. Ms. Chandra gave no reason for her motion for noli pros. Yet Judge Gottschall inferred from the transcript that was because the witness she didn't.
A favorable disposition.
I'm sorry.
You agree it wouldn't be treated as a favorable disposition if the state said, "We think you're guilty, but you're not worth prosecuting."
I would agree with that, but there's nothing in the record to that effect. Nothing at all. The only thing in the record is a motion for noli pros, and then no further proceeding after. Ms. Chandra, the state's attorney, turned it over to her expert in the state's attorney's office on computers. That was an abandonment. Now, on the question of the motion for sanctions having been mooted, we believe that this court decided just a month ago that issues are not mooted where there still remain issues to be decided. In the Zesser versus Keith case. In our case, there still had not been decided whether or not Sears should have been sanctioned because it destroyed or failed to preserve material evidence. And part of the.
I don't understand how that could survive. If we affirm the dismissal of your suit, I don't know. Would you still be pushing for sanctions?
Absolutely. I
for
think
what,
that.
For money? But
In the interest of justice. They knew about this evidence.
It would have been harmless, right?
I'm sorry? It would not have been harmless.
No, if we affirmed and your malicious prosecution case goes away, it's then irrelevant that they destroyed evidence, right?
It is certainly relevant because they did so.
No, look, one way in which destroying relevance is relevant, destroying evidence, is you can draw an adverse inference, right?
Correct.
But suppose that even with drawing the adverse inference, we concluded that your malicious prosecution case was properly dismissed. Then the destruction wouldn't have helped Sears. Now, maybe it might have put you to some additional expense, right? That would be...
Well, Your Honor...
Is that what you're asking for? That
the sanctions that
you
are...
You have to spend more money on...
Sanctions should be imposed upon a party who, particularly in the case of Sears, is a well-known international corporation.
What are you looking for in the way of sanctions?
We're looking for attorney's fees and costs. We're looking for, even if their finding is against them, the summary judgment, there still could be a direction of a default judgment under the Illinois cases and under the federal cases that have talked about spoliation. Spoliation of evidence is a duty.
Thank you, counsel.
I'm sorry?
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Klein.
Good morning, Your Honors. Arthur Klein for the defendant. I don't want to reiterate a lot of the discussion that's been going on, but let me suggest that first, that the summary judgment was totally appropriate. Judge Gottschall decided correctly, I believe, that the proceeding was not terminated in the plaintiff's favor. If we look at SWIC, which is the leading Illinois Supreme Court case, that says that the circumstances must compel the inference that there was no reasonable grounds to proceed, and I just don't think we have this here at all. If we're talking about the restatement, there's also some language in SWIC that talks about Section 661, which says that if the proceeding is dismissed because of impossibility or impracticability, it is not a termination in favor of the accused. And I think the best case here is that it fits within that rubric. The evidence is uncontroverted that the only reason for the abandonment, or the nolle pros, rather, was that the witness was unavailable and the judge wouldn't grant a continuance. Ms. Chandra, who's the only relevant witness here, said that she did not believe he was innocent, that she dismissed it only because she couldn't get a continuance because of the witness, and everything else, there is nothing else to rebut the inference.
Do we know why the judge didn't grant the continuance?
I'm reading the cold transcript, and it's in the record, and he just wouldn't do it. I mean, I can't give you an answer to that. Was he right?
He didn't say you're harassing this fellow.
No, he just said, I'm not continuing it. Goodbye. And she said, it's a very short transcript, and it's in the record. And she said, well, I'm just going to take a nolle pros. And what you have after that, at best, is prosecutorial discretion, because there's just nothing else there. Whether Mr. Dang believed he was innocent or not, I must suggest, is just totally irrelevant to this cause of action.
That plus the fact that the prosecutor, oddly in this litigation, files a statement equivalent to saying, I'm an ignoramus, so I didn't know what I was doing. Is that normal for assistant state's attorneys in Illinois?
I wish I could answer the question. But I think it fits with the proposition that it was not consistent with his innocence. She was looking for the witness, and if she was looking for help, perhaps she should have gotten it. Even beyond that, and I think, you know, Your Honors, the Logan case with which you're familiar, reiterates the right for any reason rule. So even if we escape the proposition that this was not terminated in plaintiff's favor, I don't see how we get past probable cause or malice. Mr. Teague is not relevant here. The relevant person is Mr. Peskin. He's the one who did the investigation. He talked to all the witnesses. He was told that Mr. Dang was upset about his performance review. that he went on a tirade, that he came in when he shouldn't have, that he deleted a great number of computer files and directories that other people needed. There was motive for it, and his investigation was thoroughly vetted by the police department, by a detective who not only redid the investigation, talked to the same people, but tried to talk to Day. He called him on the phone, asked him if he would come in. He said he would come in. He didn't come in. The question is, the reasonable belief of the person who initiates it, and in this case, it was Mr. Peskin, and he certainly had a reasonable belief. There is nothing in this record that could possibly dispute it. Mr. Teague testified not only that he didn't know anything about the proceeding until long after it was filed. So whatever personal issues they have goes to Peskin. Mr. Dane said he didn't know Peskin, knew nothing about him, and assumed that he was just doing his job, if I remember his testimony.
I have a question about the alleged spoliation. Was this done, were these documents destroyed after, before or after Dane brought the suit?
Before. They were scratched while the criminal proceeding was pending, and he was out of state and would not return. And
so you weren't a party to a proceeding involving him?
That's correct. And if we talk about the alleged spoliation for a minute, Sears didn't do anything wrong. What happened is that the files were apparently scratched by the Sears supplier during the pendency of the criminal case, which was basically on hold until they found him. But if we're talking about spoliation, we come to several other issues, aside from the fact that Sears didn't destroy anything that was relevant, and that's the base issue. Whether he was innocent or not is not relevant to this cause of action. It's a very limited cause of action. It is not favored. And the most that this could prove, if he's right, and certainly there's no indication that he is, is that maybe a mistake was made. And a mistake is not lack of probable cause. It is not malice. And this motion, quite frankly, I don't know what to say about it, because it just, to me, and I don't mean to be difficult, just doesn't make any sense. Aside from the fact that Sears did nothing wrong, aside from the fact that there's no possible proof of malice, it goes to nothing. Because, as I said, and I don't mean to keep beating a dead horse here, whether Dane was innocent or not has no relevance at all to this proceeding. And I think the summary judgment was perfectly appropriate for all three reasons, all of which must be proven. A termination in favor, that's not there. A probable cause is certainly there. There certainly is no malice. The right for any reason rule applies, and we respectfully submit that the summary judgment was appropriate and that it should be affirmed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.